everybody. I'm Stephanie Beaumont, and this is CNB Seen and Heard, rolling through our eighth season of celebrating the four Atlantic provinces here on Cove FM, where with each broadcast, I want to bring you just a little bit closer to some of the amazing personalities that make up this corner of the planet. They may be native to Nova Scotia or New Brunswick, Prince Edward Island or Newfoundland and Labrador, or they may be kindred spirits who simply adore living and working in Atlantic Canada. The only requirement here is that you're willing to raise the fun flag and wave it in salute of Canada's awesome East Coast. And when it comes to celebrating the region, well, there's no finer event than the Atlantic International Film Festival. It's our annual tradition here on the show to bring you the inside scoop, and there's plenty to celebrate, what with this being their 45th annual festival. Halifax, Nova Scotia is the place to be from September 10th through the 17th. You can join movie makers and industry shakers for 8 days filled with incredible panels and presentations, a stellar slate of special guests, and of course, a phenomenal array of remarkable movies from around the world and right here on Canada's East Coast, including a gripping and mysterious film out of Newfoundland called Hang Ashore. And coming up later in the show, we'll connect with the CNBC fave, the filmmaker himself, Justin Oakey. So stay tuned for that. But let's kick things off with a conversation we have with the festival's interim executive director and the director of programming to talk about this spectacular lineup of films set to screen and all of the amazing ways to get the most out of this milestone event. Here's my telephone conversation with the one and only Lisa Holler. Well, I can't believe I got her, to be honest. It's just days away now from the Atlantic International Film Festival, the 45th edition. Lisa Holler, happy anniversary.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me today.
Now, you seem very calm, but maybe that's because you and the team have been working literally since last year stopped.
That's right. Yeah, no, we're really excited to get things rolling in the coming days.
Yeah. Okay, well, and they are action-packed days, to be sure of it. And we're going to go through some of the amazing films that you folks have chosen for this year. But I want to start by, you know, we talked about being 45 years and it being the milestone, but it's such a staple in terms of the entertainment scene here on the East Coast. But it really started small, Lisa, and has grown. And I wondered if you could just take us back to where it started and how big it has become.
Yes, so we started as a really small film festival 45 years ago. It's with a passion of film, and it's grown to something that is a staple, as you said, in the East Coast, and we're so proud of that. We're so proud to be celebrating 45 years and celebrating everyone that got us here, from the filmmakers to past staff to the community to the volunteers. So we're really excited to welcome people into the festival, whether it's their first time or their 45th time. We're excited to showcase Atlantic filmmaking talents and storytellers who will be taking the center stage again this year, alongside films that have received a lot of wide praise at other film festivals like Cannes or Sundance and Hot Docs and beyond. So we are thrilled to be finally opening our doors again this year very soon.
It's amazing when you think about it too. And you speak to the people that come here, they really are from all over the world, Lisa.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, of course, we want to showcase our Atlantic filmmaking talent who come from all provinces. So we try to highlight films and filmmakers from across the region. We are the Atlantic International Film Festival, so we'd love to celebrate our homegrown, exciting talent here. But we welcome people from across Canada and internationally as well to the festival as special guests, as delegates, as speakers. And so it really is an international event as well.
Now, I never like to do math on the broadcast, but I know you have a hard number of total films in this year's festival. What is that, Lisa Holler? Go.
Yeah, I mean, this is always hard because there's so many amazing films that we have to choose from. But this year we have over 100 films. We have 60 feature films. So that's narrative features, documentaries, everything from romance to drama to thriller to horror films. You name it, we've got it. And then we have six programs that consists of 48 short films. So each one of these programs offers a variety of films, from animation to documentary to narrative, from all over the world, from Atlantic Canada, across Canada, and international award winners. So the shorts programs have a little bit of everything.
So Lisa, one of the many hats you wear is program director. Now, it seems just like, I don't know, clockwork, like this incredible tapestry of films that you've put together. But could you just explain how it starts and how you do it? Because you think of the thousands of films that come out every year. Where do you even begin?
Yeah, so that's a great question. We do receive lots of submissions formally through our submissions platform, so people who are submitting their projects. And then we're also tracking films year-round, so films that are getting funding from Canadian sources, films that are coming out of schools from emerging filmmakers, not only in Canada but across the world. And we're also looking at programs at other film festivals. So what is coming out in this year? So what's winning the awards? What's getting audience favorites? What are getting people talking? And so we want to highlight a little bit of everything and showcase the most exciting films coming out of the world in September here in Halifax. And we do that with a big team. So we have an incredible programming team of leads that are mostly based in Atlantic Canada, but they have incredible experience, different perspectives. They're academics, they're filmmakers in their own right. They're professional programmers, and we all work together. So we screen the films, and then we talk and discuss about each film and each program to ensure that there is a diversity in the program, that it's really well-balanced, well-rounded, and that there's films with perspectives from all over, whether it's emerging talents or documentary perspectives or from different countries and different filmmaker backgrounds. So it's a real team effort, and we really take a lot of care to try to curate something that is really intentional and that we really hope that will appeal to our audiences here in the Atlantic region.
Now, as program director, do you have veto power? Can you go, absolutely not?
You know, it really is. I try to guide the conversation, but right. The programmers, they each have their own sections, and we really work together. So okay. Instead of having one person make the decisions, they're made as a team. So it is right. Really curated together, and that, you know, it allows for a lot of discussion, yeah. A lot of back and forth. But at the end of the day, we're all really committed to the film program that we have here. And of course, there's some that you're not able to showcase every year, but the ones that we have, we're so proud of, and everyone is really excited to present them at the festival.
That's so great. Well, I know in the vast list that you have, some are actually thrown into the spotlight in the gala positions. And I was hoping you could talk to the one that's opening this year's festival and tell me about how it first came on your radar and how you decide why this film should be the opening night gala.
We're always really excited about the opening night film, and this year is no different. So it comes from an incredible filmmaking talent from Nova Scotia. Their name is Breton Hannum. They're an Indigenous filmmaker here who actually opened the festival with Wildhood a few years ago.
Yes.
And so this film is called Skedaig Amujewaegadaig, At the Place of Goats.
I'm so glad you said that. Say it one more time, because did you notice me deferring to you to say the title?
yeah. So it's called Skedaig Amujewaegadaig. And it's a genre-bending, otherworldly drama that follows two brothers as they journey to avenge the spirits that haunt them. Ooh. It's really arresting. It's compelling. It's a surprising, innovative way of telling the story. It's filmed here in Nova Scotia, and it really showcases the talent here. It's honestly one of the strongest Canadian films that I've seen in 2025. This team is incredible, and it's just indicative of the exciting talent that we have here in the Atlantic region. So we're so pleased to have Breton here and the team here. It has local producers as well. A lot of cast and crew will be in Halifax, and we're so thrilled to be showcasing this one. It's really special. And then after the opening night film, we gather for our celebration in Halifax following the film.
That's so great. Okay, and that opening night gala celebration will be at the Stardust Bar and Kitchen. But Lisa, this film, along with all of the others Will there be the opportunity to hear from the filmmaker and some of the people attached to the production?
Yeah, absolutely. So if there is a guest in the film, we always try to have an introduction and a Q&A with the talent who are at the screening. With regards to the opening night film, we have an extended introduction, and then we'll bring the director for an on-stage panel, a really intimate panel over the weekend that's going to be free to the public to enjoy. And it's going to be a deep dive into their method, the creation of this film, the inspiration of the film, and really having an opportunity to get to know the filmmaker for our opening night. So that's where you can really understand the artistry of the filmmaker for that opening night film.
That's so great. And you bring up a really good point, because in addition to the films, you've, you know, created these wonderful workshops and also some great panel discussions and things like that. And are they all open to the public, Lisa? Is that how it works? Or
yeah, so typically a lot of these are only available to our industry pass holders, but as part of our celebration for our 45th anniversary, we're opening them up. So it's 3 days of panels, everything from intimate conversations with lead talents from the Atlantic region, or reading of scripts, like 80s fun scripts of, with Atlantic acting talent, to understanding kind of the state of the industry or how to. People who will make decisions in the film industry will be talking. So there are 3 days of panels this year that we're opening up for free for the public. It's also going to be at Cineplex Park Lane in a dedicated theater, Theater 3. And you don't need a ticket. You can just come, enjoy, learn something, and hopefully be inspired.
Oh, that's so great. Okay, and of course, all of the information will be at AtlanticFilmFestival.ca. Now, I'm going to skip over the Atlantic Gala because I want to leave that for our ending, but I want to talk about the closing night before I lose you, because this is a film that is getting, I don't mind saying, a ton of buzz at the minute, and I don't know if it's just because of one of the stars, but certainly whenever J-Lo is attached to anything, there's a lot of talk. So tell me a little bit about your closing night gala and The Kiss of the Spider-Woman.
Yeah, so this film is directed by Bill Condon. So this is the director of Dreamgirls, and it's a musical drama that, yes, stars Jennifer Lopez. And she dazzles in the film. It's an unlikely friendship of a political prisoner cellmates in Argentina, and they escape the realities of their life in prison by recounting their favorite film and their favorite film's movie star, who is played by Jennifer Lopez. So you get swooped out of the harsh realities of a prison cell into a classic, lavish Technicolor musical, which has Jennifer and the team dazzling with song and dance and drama. And so it's a really beautiful piece. I think audiences will really enjoy it. It premiered at Sundance earlier this year, and it did really well with audiences there. So we're excited to share it on the big screen here.
And any rumors that Jennifer Lopez is coming to Halifax, are those true?
They're not true.
Okay. Can we start one, you and I? We'll just get some dish going here now.
We can start one. Yeah, wouldn't that be fine if she came? Yeah, no, I don't know.
Wow.
Schedule this year, sadly.
No, that's fair. That's fair. Yeah. She's a busy woman. But nonetheless, talk about busy. There's tons on the go. And, you know, we talk about it being the 45th edition. And I love that you're celebrating some of the films and productions, Canadian productions, that are worthy of celebrating. And, you know, everything from Closet Monster to Anne of Green Gables. Talk to me a little bit about some of those incredible productions that you're bringing back, the Atlantic In Focus.
Yeah. So this year we're expanding our In Focus to concentrate on Atlantic films, one from each province. So like you mentioned, Closet Monster is a film by Stephen Dunn. It was their debut. This is a filmmaker out of Newfoundland who's doing incredible things now, setting up for a Netflix series, I believe. And
yes,
Closet Monster is celebrating its 10th anniversary. So we'll have Stephen here at the screening, and also for a free artist-to-artist chat over the weekend, which is lovely. Highly recommend that. We have the classic miniseries, Anne of Green Gables, by Kevin Sullivan. So this is the one that stars Megan Follow.
Love it.
It's from 1985, and it's just going to be exciting to see it on the big screen.
Yes.
So that one's celebrating 40 years.
Wow.
Yeah, kind of incredible.
Yes.
And then we have an award-winning documentary called Shadowmen by Renee Blanchot. So she is from New Brunswick, an alumni of the festival. This film won awards when it premiered here a few years ago in 2018. And so we'll be celebrating the New Brunswick talent there. And then finally, we have a local Halifax filmmaker and animator, Andrea Dorfman. And her film Parsley Days was her debut that launched in 2000. And so this is a really special one as well because it's celebrating 25 years. So Andrew will be here with part of the team, and I really hope that this will be a great celebration. It really launched her into her career as a successful filmmaker, and we are thrilled to be showcasing her talent again at the festival. So just a few things to kind of acknowledge the talent here and what has happened across all provinces over the last 45 years. And again, all of those film screenings are free for the public to enjoy.
Oh, that's so
great. To rediscover.
That's so great. And I love, too, the Atlantic International Film Festival. I'm such a fan. And it's wonderful to think that, you know, there could be so many filmmakers at this year's festival who are launching, as it were, but then to have the opportunity to celebrate those people who have gone on to worldwide acclaim and things like that. It's just extraordinary. So congratulations to you and the team. I want to just quickly mention the fact that there's the opportunity to watch some of the Atlantic productions online again. That's right, isn't it, Lisa?
That is right. So if you're not able to make it into Halifax during our festival in September, we do have some online options of our Atlantic films. So a selection of our Atlantic short and feature films will be available on our online platform over the final day and then extending over another weekend. So from the 17th until the 21st, I believe. So the Wednesday till the Sunday, you can watch some of our Atlantic titles from the comfort of your home. But yeah, I think if you're able to make it to Halifax, I think it's definitely worth the trip. And we have so many incredible films. And like you mentioned, we have a lot that are celebrating their world premiere. So this is the first time the film is going to be seen with a public audience on the big screen. So we will have the filmmakers here for those screenings, including Justin Oakey with a world premiere of his ghostly thriller drama, Hang Ashore. We'll have Sherry White here with Blueberry Grunt. We'll have the Dancing on the Elephant team, which stars Mary Walsh and Sheila McCarthy, also celebrating its world premiere. Taylor Olson's film, a Halifax staple and really beloved alumni, will have a world premiere of What We Dreamed of Then. And we also have other world premieres from across the country, including a documentary called The Pitch and an amazing Quebecois talent, Yann Giroux, celebrating their world premiere as well for their second feature, My Son Came Back to Disappear. So again, so much to see, whether it's like music and pop culture or moody ghost stories or the wild and weird. We really do hope that people find something at the festival that intrigues them, inspires them, and gets them into the cinema to see it on the big screen.
Indeed. And you can buy individual tickets for movies or buy the festival pass and get the full experience, because not only will you get a chance to see the movies and hear from the filmmakers and stars, but you'll also get a chance to network if it's something you're dreaming of doing or making your foray into the industry. No better place to be. Hey, Lisa?
Yeah, that's perfect. Thank you so much. Yeah.
Now, listen, before we go, I definitely want to celebrate this year's Atlantic Gala because it's a project that's been on my radar for a long time, and it'll bridge nicely into a tune to send us home. But talk to me a little bit about Little Lorraine and why you chose this picture for this year's Atlantic Gala.
Yes, Little Lorraine is directed by Andy Hines, so it's an anticipated debut by this Grammy-nominated director, who's originally from Annapolis Valley, and it's based on true events of a remote fishing and mining town that becomes a hub for drug smuggling. And it's shot in Cape Breton and Halifax, which becomes its own character really throughout the movie, and it stars some wonderful East Coast talent, including Stephen McCaddy, Steve Lund, Auden Thornton, and then also stars Sean Astin and Stephen Amell. It's produced locally. This is a film that we've been tracking for a long time. We had a chat with them last year as part of our industry programming. We spotlighted the film and the producer's journey to get it produced. And it is inspired by a song by Adam Baldwin called The Lighthouse at Little Lorraine. And so there's a lot of buzz around this film. Yeah. It's already sold out. We added another screening the day following. It's also going to have a free panel with some of our special guests who are here to talk about the film in depth, but I encourage people to check out the panel, and also if you're interested, there's always the rush line to see this film. It's a wonderful crime drama. It really stood out as a uniquely Atlantic piece that is indicative of a rising star, Andy Hines, so we're so thrilled to be presenting it and have him here to discuss the film and to celebrate with us. So, yeah, this is a star already, and we're so excited to have the film as our gala.
That's awesome. And there'll be a party to follow that. It's going to be a celebration for sure in Halifax during this year's 45th Atlantic International Film Festival. And coming up after the break here on CNBC Seen and Heard, we'll connect with Newfoundland-born filmmaker Justin Oakey to talk about his movie, Hang Ashore, that will make its world premiere at the festival. But how about say we play a little Adam Baldwin now as we thank the wonderful Lisa Haller for making the time. Good luck to you and the team. We'll see you at the movies.
Thank you so much again for having me.
I got an Uncle Huey, he's got a boat down in Manitou. And when I lost my job at Devco, he says, have I got a job for you? See, I put my faith into no one. I got no time for the government. Since they ripped up my house in Lewisburg and stuck it down on some blocks of cement. He says there's a boat coming up from America with caskets filled with cocaine. There's a gold mine out on the ocean and a lighthouse in Little Lorraine. There's a lighthouse in Little Lorraine. He took his boat off the coast of Batesden, just out of sight of the shore. Me and my cousin and a Frenchman I never laid eyes on before. We met a boat that had come up from Boston. It started heaving boxes overboard. Huey handed them a big bag of money. We were back in the harbor round four. Singing there's a boat coming up from America with caskets filled with cocaine. There's a gold mine out on the ocean and a lighthouse in Little Lorraine. There's a lighthouse in Little Lorraine. We'd be met there by seven morticians, loaded the boxes into their hearse. We'd set off with $8,000, laughing about what we'd spend it on first. Frenchman tells me his name is Thibault, that he grew up in Elmerdam. We could all go down to church hall on Saturday and get drunker than hell at the dance. One night Thibault got fired up on moonshine, tried to beat up a Catholic priest. We got thrown out on our ass behind that church hall. We spent the night with the mounted police. We went on working for weeks every Sunday till Huey says we gotta slow it down. Someone's been singing like a jailbird and it brought all the Mounties to town. They heard there's a boat coming up from America, heard about the caskets filled with cocaine. There's a gold mine out on the ocean and a lighthouse in Little Lorraine. There's a lighthouse in Little us all down to the docks one night, and he hustled us out to the sea. He shut off the engines and the floodlights, and he pointed a shotgun at me. I said, Huey, I ain't the one been singing. Must be the Frenchman from Milmadam. He says that's just what a turncoat would tell me. Least he can do is to die like a man. Funny they could not be bothered with a casket, but what use is it now to complain? There's a graveyard out on the ocean and a lighthouse in Little Lorraine. And as the buckshot, it entered my brain. I saw the lighthouse in Little Lorraine. There's a lighthouse in Little Lorraine.
Seen and heard here on Cove FM. I'm your host, Stephanie Beaumont, thrilled to be celebrating the 45th annual Atlantic International Film Festival, taking place in Halifax from September 10th through the 17th, with more than 100 films from all over the planet, including right here in Atlantic Canada. And among them is a gripping and mysterious world premiere of a movie from the beautiful province of Newfoundland and Labrador. It's called Hang Ashore, and it's set to screen on Friday, September the 12th. Well, it's always such a treat to chat with the man behind the movie. He's always up to something incredibly creative. I am truly thrilled to connect with him now and celebrate his new picture. He's award-winning. He's wonderful. Ladies and gentlemen, he's Newfoundland's own, the one and only, Justin Oakey. How are you now?
I'm doing very well. We got a bit of rain and cloud here in Newfoundland finally, so starting to feel a bit more normal around here after a strange summer.
Oh, I know. We had the same thing here, and I gotta say, you're jubilant when you see rain, and I love a little bit of crisp air. I don't mind saying. I love the fall.
Yeah, me too, and I feel like it would definitely feel a bit strange getting into festival season with Hang Ashore, obviously, being so cold and so intense with its cold atmosphere, and I'm sitting here in, like, you know, a 30-degree drought in Newfoundland,
yeah,
trying to talk about the coldness of Hang Ashore was a bit strange. So I welcome the cold weather for sure.
Well, there you go. Well, that's a perfect place to start, because I am one of those people who lives vicariously through your Instagram feed. So I felt like the tundra, as it were, the frozen and otherwise of Newfoundland and Labrador was not anything strange to you, but you certainly put your incredible cast and crew through the rigors of it. And I wondered, when you started dreaming of this, did you think of the practicality of it, or was it, we're going to make this no matter what?
It's a good question. It's hard because I don't want to sound like I write everything in sort of a calculated, pragmatic way, because I don't. But this film definitely had a sense of, okay, we know what kind of budget we're going to be going for, and what's really going to make this film sing and stand out is unique locations. Very small film. I mean, there's very few characters. I think the locations, the actual geography, the topography of Newfoundland, the landscape, it just plays a character of its own.
Yes.
And so as I was writing, I think as I got a few drafts in and I started seeing how the film was coming together on paper, I really started finding those locations just personally in my head so that I could write to them. So if I knew what the cliffs were going to look like, I could write to the strength of that location and basically not put anything in the script that then a week before shooting it, we had to remove because the location we found couldn't do it.
Right.
And so it's a little bit of practicality that way. You know, when you know what kind of boat you're going to shoot on, at least in theory, you don't write things that can't happen. Because I didn't want to get, again, a week before shooting and all of a sudden you realize, oh, we can't do that stunt on that boat because, you know, it doesn't even have a galley or it doesn't even have this. So I think there's a little bit of both. You know, we're going to do it no matter what. You know, I definitely dragged the crew very supportive, dragged the cast and crew up into the mountains and then, you know, and into the ocean and things like that.
Right.
And, you know, there was some underwater work and things, but I think everyone was gung-ho and the script was tailored to the locations that I really wanted in my head. And I think that it all just kind of came together in both a practical and kind of a silly way at the same time.
Well, no, it was extraordinary. Now, I'm going to read it, the line that just sort of encapsulates it now for everybody. Hang Ashore is a visually arresting thriller that is steeped in folklore, superstition, and a simmering sense of supernatural dread. And I was like, wow, I literally throughout was making notes of all the superstitions because Justin Oakey, my mom, was like the most superstitious Newfoundlander I knew. And she didn't have a fishing background in her world. So I learned a whole bunch of new ones. But are you superstitious, Justin?
Yes. I mean, I believe there's certain things that I, you know, there's superstitions that you don't think about because they just, I guess they've been woven into your person, you know, by your parents, your grandparents and things. Like, there's things that you do, you know, daily, weekly, even if it's like very infrequently, there's things you do because you just always did them.
Yes.
And it's no harm. You know, there's no harm to being superstitious. I mean, I think if you are scared to leave your house because you're superstitious,
right,
is one thing, you know.
Yeah.
I don't slam on the brakes when I see a black cat on the road, but I think Newfoundland has just had such a rich folkloric, you know, culture. Like,
right,
the folklore culture here is very, very, very rich, and I think that there's some superstitions that, I mean, it's just no harm to lean into them, especially now as a dad. I have three boys, and it's really fun to lean into some of the superstitions about, like, say, fairies.
Right.
You know, things like if Angus leaves the house and his shirt's on inside out, he has to leave it that way. Or if you don't want to be taken by the fairies, you turn your shirt inside out. Like, there's little things that every family, every part of Newfoundland has a different way to approach it. And then on top of that, obviously, Hang Ashore has more, like, maritime,
indeed,
seafaring superstitions.
Yes.
You know, there's things that, you know, there's, like, the woman on a boat, there's the stowaway, there's the whistling, you know, whistling on the deck of a boat. Like, there's little things that, whether or not anyone cares about them anymore, they are still superstitions that have been passed down. And so I think it's kind of fun to play with those as a source of tension in a film.
Indeed. Well, I mean, there were a lot. And like I said, I learned a ton. And I don't want to give too much away about the film because there's a sense of foreboding from the jump. Now, I will suggest it's a film that in my mind starts as one thing and ends as something entirely different, I thought, but then loops back around to leave me wondering about absolutely everything, Justin. I just was like,
wait a second. This is not supposed to sound pretentious because it wasn't intentional.
Okay.
When I was editing the film, when I finished one of the cuts, this was not when the film was done. In the middle of the cut, I was a little bit stumped about some things. And I played the film back for myself in the editing software. And I happened to have a setting where it loops your timeline, so it automatically starts over as soon as you finish, and it was just an accident. And there was a moment where the film played back right away. So after, you know what the first, you know what the
yes.
final shot of the film is.
Yes.
And the final shot of the film, there was no credits at the time, and it immediately started playing again at the beginning with the voiceover and sort of like a little dream sequence. And it was really funny because I felt like the film, like, whoa, this film is a lot more kind of circular. Like, it feels like a circuit or a loop.
Yes.
And I didn't realize it until I saw that happen, happy accident.
Oh, good.
And as a result, I'm like, you know, it was always intended to start as this kind of, you know, start as one thing. I don't want to give too much away. Sorry.
No, exactly. I'm the same way. I don't want to give too much.
You know, calling it a thriller is definitely a little bit difficult because it's got mysterious elements, it's got thrilling elements, but it's also got, you know, some sort of gloomy romantic elements. And, you know, you have characters that are a little bit enigmatic or moody. And, you know, you have circumstances that feel a little bit supernatural, but, like, you can also question whether they're supernatural. And, you know, there's just some stuff going on in the third act that definitely feels different than the first act. But I think that the global view I had of the film when it accidentally looped it one time, I started realizing, oh, like Vera, Harry Hilmar's character, that journey she has, you could kind of watch it in a loop. So it's kind of like time. It feels like a linear story. Then when it's over, you realize, oh, it doesn't necessarily have to be a linear story. The entire thing could be a reflection, or the entire thing could be like a projection of the future. Like, there's just, it kind of became a bit strange that way for me. So after that happened, playing with the linear nature of the film really kind of took off.
So now I'm glad you brought up your editing, because I should have saluted you at the very beginning. You're a multi-award winning editor. And, you know, you hear this all the time where directors will say that the movie is made in the editing suite. And, you know, it's one thing to write a movie and pass it off to a director. It's another thing to direct a movie you've written and then sit with the editor. But to continue from your imagination to picture lock is quite an onerous activity. However, I'm wondering if it takes a little bit of the load off you, or is it still a puzzle when you get in there? How was this film Hang Ashore for you, Justin?
I really like editing. I feel like editing is definitely a calling for me. You know, if you had to make me pick, I'd probably pick editing over directing if I had to pick a lane. I do like both, but if I had to pick a lane, because editing, every project has its own challenges. Every project I learn, I feel like the past few years I've been working with so many amazing directors that I just learn so much. It feels like I'm in film school every time I edit a film because I'm learning how to fix issues or like how to recut a scene that started as one thing and then we had to recut it to mean the complete opposite and finding ways to do that. So all those moments of editing other people's films really helped me with editing my own films, obviously.
Yeah.
You kind of get a skill set that, you know, a toolbox that you can pick from. But I think with Hang Ashore, we had very little time to shoot it. It was 3 weeks. We had to be very deliberate with our coverage. It wasn't like a meandering, get it all, we'll figure it out in the edit.
Yeah.
So in this case, I mean, we only had so much to work with. There was very, very little fat. I mean, the entire climax of our film, you know, there's moments where we had like one setup, two setups at the most.
And, right.
You know, it was very, very lean. And so because it was lean, the editing didn't have a whole lot of directions it could go. I knew I wanted it to be a bit of a slow burn. So the editing on this one, being the editor, it lightened the load during the directing process because I kind of had to edit it while we were on set, like thinking about it.
Yeah.
Because we had so little time. I had to think as an editor while filming.
Right.
I didn't have to worry if we got enough because like as we were filming it, I just, you know, I had that ability to foresee we had enough.
Right. There were some, if you don't mind me saying, some like Hitchcock-esque angles that kind of edited into the next shot. And I was like, ooh, that's dreamy. And then I thought to myself, well, if he's editing, you know, are you thinking about that when you're like,
yes,
you are. Okay.
Yes. The match cuts were, I mean, it's hard for me to separate the directing and the editing on set. Even if I wasn't editing something,
right,
I'm still thinking about it as an editor. I think,
okay,
you know, the idea of setting up match cuts, the idea of setting up really clever L and J cuts, figuring out the transitions from scene one to scene two, you know, those things always play in my mind as a director. I rarely think of a scene as a standalone piece.
Yeah.
And that's just, I mean, the other thing is my films are very tonal, they're very atmosphere heavy. And so I'm always thinking of ways to carry the atmosphere from scene to scene. I'm not treating it like a, you know, there's more atmosphere than there is dialogue in a lot of cases. So
yeah.
I had to think about it as like an overarching, like how do I carry the tone for this many minutes, you know?
Right. If you don't mind me asking about the atmosphere, I am not a DP, so I wouldn't know the rigors of it, but there's an inordinate amount of both steam and fog and weather and water, and I'm thinking to myself, that has to take a toll on...
We could spend about 4 hours discussing how we did the fog scenes. I had a really, really, our DOP, James Klopko, he's very, very talented. I've worked with him many times, and he's a buddy of mine, and it's just, he came on knowing the limitations, you know, in terms of the resources that we had, but also he knew the limitations in terms of, you know, we're shooting in Newfoundland in the middle of winter,
right,
on the water, in most cases not on set, you know, it was all real locations.
Yeah.
The boat was a real location, you know, so he knew all those limitations, and he's very talented, so he was able to work very efficiently within them. And I mean, almost everything in the film that you see, fog, smoke, water, it's all practical effects. The boat being completely socked in fog at the end of the film, I mean, that was all practical fog. Like, we didn't rely on, we had no VFX budget, so,
right.
You know, we didn't rely on VFX. Everything's practical. You know, we did underwater shots for when people were in the water. I mean, we did that in genuine water. We had to. I think you're right. It is a bit of a tall ask for people in the middle of winter, but everyone was really gung-ho. And honestly, I think from the DOP to even our key grip, I mean, everyone saw it as a challenge,
yes,
for better or for worse, and it was like problem solving and fun. I don't want to speak for anybody, but even when it was like a hard challenge and probably frustrating, everyone seemed to at least treat it as something that like, okay, we got to crack this nut, like how do we figure this out,
right?
Because you want everyone to be safe, you want everyone to be dry, you want everyone to be warm, but you also need to get shots where everyone is, you know, in the middle of danger, cold and wet. So
yeah,
we had scenes where we're on a beach in like minus 25 and we have two of our stars crawling up the beach soaked in water, you know. We had to actually do it, and you just got to find a way that, you know, you're spraying them down with warm water, hoping that they won't steam on camera.
Right.
And, it's just, you know, there's, you find ways to do it, but yeah, it's, everyone just kind of has to be invested.
Indeed. Okay, well, now we've got to stop down for a commercial break. So let me do this and then we'll come back and we'll talk about your incredible cast.
Great.
Justin Oakey, you have to write your next movie. Give me the song you're listening to that's going to motivate you to make it.
Oh, that's That's a difficult one, I think.
It could be anything. Anything. You pick it now. You're probably working on something if you haven't already gotten something banked.
I'll throw this one out there because it's a strange one.
Okay.
Because I'm in the middle of writing a horror film.
Ooh.
And there's a very peculiar scene where a character is dancing in his underwear to Sentimental Lady by Bob Welsh. And it's an interesting one. And I think I'm going to throw it out there only because... It's a clashing of aesthetics.
Right.
It's a very, very creepy scene, but this guy is just, you know, jamming out to a cassette of Bob Welsh. So maybe I'll give you that one. Only because it's fresh in my mind.
Okay.
That's
wow.
The only reason I'll give you that one.
A disturbing request from our very special guest. I'm only teasing. I can't wait to see
that one. That's a great song.
It totally is. And I can't wait to play it for Mr. Justin Oakley. We'll be back to talk to him about his brand new movie, Hang Ashore. But right now, here's Bob Welsh on Cove FM.
You are here and warm, but I could look away and you'd be gone. 'Cause we live in a time when meaning falls in splinters from our lives. That's why I've traveled far, 'cause I come so together where you are. Yes, and all of the things that I said that I wanted come rushing by in my head when I'm with you. 14 joys and a will to be merry. All of the things that they say are very sentimental. Gentle wind blowing through my life again. Said that I wanted come rushing by in my head when I meet you. 14 joys and a will to be merry. All of the things that they say are very sentimental. Gentle wind blowing through my life again. Sentimental, baby, gentle one. Sentimental.
Be seen and heard here on Cove FM. I'm your host, Stephanie Beaumont. So excited that the 45th annual Atlantic International Film Festival is set to go here in Halifax, and one of the movies that we'll be screening is Hang Ashore by award-winning Newfoundland and Labrador director Justin Oakey. Before the break, now, Justin, we were talking about the mechanics of it, the production of it, the editing of it, but let me ask you about the casting for this film, because it's a real, well, you're working again with your old pal, who I'm guessing is like a slam dunk when it comes to delivery, Stephen Oates, right? You worked with him on A Fire in the Cold Season. Buddy delivers, there's no question about it. But then you've got an Australian actor, James Freshville, and an Icelandic actress, although, you know, she's more popular in North America for sure, Hera Hilmar. How did you get this group together? And like, what was the casting? Did you have them in mind when you wrote it? Was it a throw out the net and see who bites? How did it work?
It was like a blessing and a curse to send out offers to two people that you really think, okay, my number one and my number two, these are my first choices for various reasons. and then they both come back super positive. And you're like, okay, so how do we make the money work? I only expected maybe one of them to... We were really lucky. I think they were not in my mind during the writing process. Okay. I rarely do that with cast. But I think early on in the prep process, like way before we even got into filming, I started... James Freshville, who I had my sights set on, he was the only person that we reached out to for Jack because wow. I was watching a film he was in called The Royal Hotel. And he had a small part in it, and I didn't know it was him. And I actually paused the film, sent a picture of his character to my producer, Pat, and said, this is like the vibe. This is what I want for Jack. And then he wrote back and said, well, why don't you just go after him? I was like, well, I don't know. It kind of just felt like they street cast this guy. And I looked up who it was, and then I realized, like, you know, holy cow, this yeah. is James Freshville, and he's in films I've seen him in, and I really liked that he was in Animal Kingdom and Black 47. Yeah. And Black 47 in particular, he speaks in the Irish language. He's not Irish, but he learned right. all of his lines phonetically for the Irish language, and he did an incredible job. It's a very tense thriller set during the Irish potato famine. And so as soon as I realized the guy I thought was just like a blue-collar worker they pulled off the street and told him to come in and do a line in this bar, when I realized that this guy that looks hard as nails is, you know, a professional actor, I was like, oh, let's go after him.
Yeah.
And we did, and he was really receptive to it, and he lives in Wales. And so he kind of gets, you know, he gets the Newfoundland vibe a little bit anyway.
Yes.
And then with Hera, very similar to James, Hera was the only person we approached for the role. And we were really lucky that it just worked out kind of miraculously that both of our wish list actors came through. But with Hera, it was, I don't know, she just, I've seen her in so many different films. I watch a lot of Nordic cinema. I mean, she's obviously in stuff here, too. She's in Sea and things like that in North America. But it's her stuff in Nordic cinema. I feel like she always kind of, I don't know, she just has some sort of enigmatic,
yes.
kind of mysterious nature
yes.
to her. She's
yes.
very she's very cold and warm at the same time
yes.
when she plays her characters. Not speaking to her as a person. She's obviously a very lovely person. But her characters are always very cold and warm at the same time. Like, they
yes.
feel distant, but they also kind of feel like they wrap around you a bit. And she just became my choice. I wanted to find somebody who had that atmosphere. And then her willingness to do her character's internal dialogue, like anything that was voiceover, doing it in her mother tongue, like doing it in Icelandic, just kind of gave the film a little bit of a dreamy touch to it.
Well, I was going to ask you, because I mean, it's rare, first of all, to see Icelandic in any movie. And then I did the digging on Hera. And was that part of it to begin with? Or did that come into it because of her?
Both. I mean,
okay.
It wasn't necessarily Icelandic. When I wrote the film, it was just supposed to be a Nordic character. At one point, it was going to be a Finnish character. Then we changed
okay.
it. It was always supposed to be someone from Scandinavia, like in the Nordic countries,
yes.
who was... And again, this goes back to the impetus of the film, I should say, is me being in Finland and finding out that there was Baltic fishermen and kind of Nordic fishermen that would fish off the coast of Newfoundland. And sometimes that meant that Newfoundland fishermen ended up having families in, say, Finland and Iceland and Norway. Sometimes that meant that Norwegian fishermen would go have families in Newfoundland. Whether or not they stayed with them is another thing. And so because that was the impetus of the story for me, being in Finland and hearing this story, and then, you know, an author I really like, this Norwegian author from the turn of the century, he also has written books about fishing off the coast of Newfoundland. So just having that weird kind of connection across the ocean. I always wanted to have an actress who had a sense of otherness to Newfoundland, you know, like
yes.
James Freshville plays a Newfoundlander and he does the Newfoundland accent pretty well.
Yeah.
And we had a dialect coach and things, but then with Hera, with her character, unfortunately the character's name is Vera and the actress's name is Hera, so it gets a little bit confusing, but we just wanted someone with otherness. She had to feel like she came from, you know, a different place.
Yes.
And I think that her language, Icelandic, has this very old quality to it, and it's very strange. I mean, there's sounds you don't hear in English, and I just feel like it kind of gave another layer of otherness to her.
Yes.
And it kind of makes the audience feel a little bit like, you know, keeps her character feeling a little bit unpredictable and kind of feeling like she's in her own little bubble. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it totally does. Well, and I mean, again, I don't want to give too much away to our listening audience, but I sure hope they go see Hang Ashore because it's a mystery. I'd love to debrief with you when you have seen it. But listen, I want to ask you just a couple more things before we lose you. Let's go back to our good pal, Stephen Oates, who you asked to do an inordinate amount in this. And I won't suggest that he's painted as a lovely character by any means.
No.
But boy, he sure goes through it. Now, is he the kind of, because you're with two actors that you've not worked with before, and obviously they're both professionals and have a great, I'm imagining, a work ethic, etc. But is Steven somebody that you just don't have to worry about now because you have a second?
Oh, I worry about Steve. For various reasons. Whether, you know, you don't have to worry about him learning his lines, but you worry about other things. Steve is a good buddy of mine, and he's
yeah.
just this very peculiar talent that
okay.
doesn't know how easy he makes things for his directors and his collaborators.
Okay.
And this is something I actually discussed with the other actors. Like, he doesn't realize how easy he makes it for people to do things. He's so, he shows up prepared. He had scenes in this film where he came to me after and was like, I completely bungled that. Like, I ruined it. Like, how can we redo it? And he just doesn't know how good he is.
Okay.
And that's a rare quality. I mean, he had scenes where he was literally barfing over the sides of the boat, getting seasick. He was green, like his face was green, and he's still doing a good job. And so I think that's what makes him a very rare talent, and I love working with him. And getting him on board for things, usually if you tell him you're putting him through the ringer.
Yes.
And there's going to be stunts and falling in water and gunplay and fighting, and you get to be an arsehole to everybody on set.
Yeah.
Like, you know, those are actually appealing roles for him. I feel like if I told him, oh, you have to do a tender drama full of romance, he'd run away. Whereas he really seems to enjoy getting put to the ringer. So, you know, that character was kind of a perfect fit for him.
Oh, indeed. Well, it was brilliantly cast, beautifully shot, an incredible story. And now before I lose you, I have to ask you this, because as I mentioned at the top of it, I have watched your Instagram feed. I've seen your lovely family grow. And there was a part of me, the hopeless romantic, as it were, that was holding out hope for your next movie to be either a rom-com or a family drama or something. And you said before the commercial break, it's a horror. Now that's sad. Congratulations on your beautiful family, by the way. And I love
They are gorgeous. But no, don't fret not, because
okay.
I do have some things that I'm working on,
okay.
Whether or not they'll be film projects. They might just be written projects, but I have some things I'm working on that are a little bit lighter tonally and, you know, kind of more influenced by my parenthood and fatherhood.
Good.
And things like
that's so good. Well, what I love about them is that they're living, at least what I see, for the most part, a technology-free existence. Would that be fair?
Yeah, I mean, it'd be really hard for me to not show them.
Of course. You know, let me rephrase that.
They get movies from time to time, but I mean, myself and my wife, Carrie, who's from Nova Scotia,
Yay.
You know, some of her family might be listening. She's
Yay.
A Maddie from Antigonish. You know, we just really try to let them have an existence. I mean, we live in a small fishing village of 300 people on the coast of Newfoundland, so we just
right.
try to give them an existence that is a bit timeless. You know,
yes.
some movies here and there, but they also get to help with the garden and the bees and the chickens and
yeah.
go fishing and do all that stuff. So we really try to strike that balance where we're not pretending it's not 2025, but we're also
right. gotcha.
Trying to keep things a bit timeless.
Well, know? It's lovely. Well, I'll look forward to that. Now, okay, so and we're here to celebrate Hang Ashore, and you're on to the next thing. Now, do you have a title, a working title, that we can look forward to on this horror movie?
Well, I have a couple things on the go. Like, I have one of the horror films I'm working on with some different collaborators. It's a remake. I'm not going to say what that
Ooh,
is yet because
okay.
I don't want to jinx it. It's a remake of a film from 20 years ago, a European horror film.
Okay.
I have some other things that I've been doing, like some smaller genre stuff that I want to put together here in Newfoundland with some collaborators.
It's never a dull moment.
No, I have a lot. I mean, I there's a lot of irons in the fire. And honestly, in between directing, I mean, between Fire in the Cold Season and this film, you know, there was 4 or 5 years in between them. And during that period, I just edited and I cut a lot of features. I mean, I did King Tide and this great film, Blood for Dust. And I did a bunch of features that I feel like really helped me pin down what I want to do next, but also how I'm going to do it.
Right.
And I think that's probably what I'll do now is, you know, between the point where I've shot Hang Ashore and actually just right now while we're talking, I've already edited 2 features. And so it's, you know, I'm always looking for those projects in between to help guide me with my next project. So what the next project will be, what I actually decide to put forward into the world and try to get funding for is still up for debate a little bit. But yeah, I have a few genre movies that are a little bit, they're less gloomy than Hang Ashore. They're horror films, but they're more fun than Hang Ashore. Hang Ashore was a bit draining in terms of like creating that atmosphere and it being so dark. So
well, it was an extraordinary feature and I congratulate you, Justin Oakey. Just keep banging it out of the ballpark, sir. And I really appreciate you making the time. I look forward to seeing you here on the ground in Halifax.
Yes, thank you very much. I mean, you've been giving me, similar to the Atlantic, you've been very supportive over the years too. So I always like having a chat.
Be sure to follow Justin on Instagram like we do at Justin Oakey and do whatever you can to see Hang Ashore when it screens here in Halifax during the Atlantic International Film Festival at the Park Lane Cinemas on Friday, September the 12th. Now, as of our Wednesday broadcast, there still were some tickets left, but don't delay. Get your tickets today at AtlanticFilmFestival.ca. And while you're there, be sure to check out the complete lineup of films for the 45th annual festival, and we'll see you at the movies. You can find the podcast version of this show, along with all of our other CNB Seen and Heard episodes, available to stream and download now on iTunes via Apple Podcasts. And for all the show notes and links to this broadcast, you can head to my Omni site at stephaniebeaumont.com. There you'll discover our entire catalog of episodes for this show, along with all of our soundtrack episodes too. Thanks to Jason McDonald for our CNB Seen and Heard theme music. Thanks to Lisa Holler and Justin Oakey for being my guests. And thanks to you for joining us today. Sure hope you will again next time here on Cove FM. I'm your host, Stephanie Beaumont. Be well till then. Thank you.